Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the demon of Brownsville Road. As a young boy, Bob Cranmer would grow up being drawn to a certain house in his neighborhood. He didn't know why, but he knew he wanted to live there. Later in life, that dream came true, and he was able to call this unpractical 7,000-plus square foot house a home. Shortly after moving in, it became more than just another house. The dead and the demonic began to make themselves known. This house would eventually inspire the book, The Demon of Brownsville Road. What started as small and seemingly insignificant events quickly turned into life-threatening attacks that required the involvement of the Catholic Church and renowned exorcists. Who or what was the demon of Brownsville Road? And how did it all begin for Bob?
Well, it's a very impressive... What would be the good word? Classical-looking, Victorian, turn-of-the-century house that really grabs anybody's attention just in its setting. It sits back from the main road, has a rather large yard and some very impressive oak trees in front of it. Large white pillars on the front porch kind of remind you of a southern plantation type mansion, you know. And everybody knows the house generally who drives by it, because it is very unique in its architecture. It was given a brass plaque by the Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation before its unique architecture. So it is a unique house just to look at. But my interest and fascination with it goes back to my earliest memories. I would suppose probably around when I was 7 years old or so. And in grade school, I had a couple friends that lived over on this side of town, and I would walk over to their houses and thus walk in front of the house. And not a time I walked in front of the house I didn't stop and just stare at it. It just seemed to be reaching out to me. I always wanted to go in it, and was very interested always in what it looked like inside and so on.
Did you ever get a chance as a child to see the inside? Did you ever know who lived in the house?
Not really. I did not. I didn't really know who owned it. Obviously, they were wealthy people. It turns out it was an attorney who had it. So I never I know one of the television programs that was done on this story shows me, you know, sneaking onto the porch and peering in one of the windows of the porch, but I never had the courage to actually go up onto the porch or anything. But my fascination with it continued on through my teenage years, to the point that when I was looking, after having moved away from Pittsburgh when I graduated from college, I was gone for 10 years and in the military, and was looking to move back here with my young family. Not particularly planning to move back to the same little town I grew up in, and my mother told me, surprisingly enough, she said, "Oh, by the way, you'll be happy to hear that your house is going on the market." And when she said, "your house," I knew immediately what she meant, because she knew what house in town fascinated me the most.
When you found out that information, what was your reaction? Did it go to a thought process of, wow, now maybe I should go back here? Was it like, well, that's a childhood dream, I've moved on from that? What was your next gut reaction when you found that information out?
My next gut reaction was instant. It was, well, I'm going to buy that house. That was it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no question in my mind. My wife had a number of other houses lined up for us to look at, but for me it was just kind of a cursory thing to do, routine. After we went to the house and looked at it, I had it in my mind that I was going to buy that house. Now, my wife didn't agree. She didn't particularly care for the house. Not that there was, she felt, she just felt it wasn't the house for us. I mean, you have this 7,500 square foot mini mansion. You know, we don't even have enough furniture for the first floor. And rightly so, she said, why in the world would we want a house like this? First of all, how old it is and how big it is. We need like a normal house, not this thing. But that fell on deaf. Those protests fell on deaf ears as far as I was concerned.
When you got to the house for the first time with the realtor to see the house, obviously you have a lot of thoughts. You have a lot of anticipation built up here throughout your whole life, having just seen the outside. You open the door, you walk in. What's going through your mind? How are you feeling about now having this question answered of what this house looks and feels like inside?
Well, it met all of my expectations and then some. And, for those that, one, you know, I grew up in a normal, small, you know, three-bedroom, normal house, two-story. When you walk into one of these old Victorian houses with the 10-foot ceilings and the large open rooms and, you know, the large foyer, and you look up and there's a balcony above you from the second floor looking down, and chandeliers and so on, and, you know, it kind of gives you the feeling you're walking into a big ship. Mm-hmm. You know, it just was an overwhelming feeling to walk into the house. I can remember how my wife and I felt. Now, that feeling obviously abated and went away over the years after we lived there. But walking into this kind of big cavernous place to begin with was certainly impressive, and it met all my expectations as far as what it looked like, and the oak woodwork and the large staircase. It just reeked of history, and I can remember thinking, you know, things like, you know, what people were in this house discussing the sinking of the Titanic. They were here talking about the beginning of World War One and all of the history and during the Depression and World War Two and all the history that took place, and thought, if these walls could only talk. And I'm fixated on history, and it just enveloped me completely, and I felt I'm going to bring all that back, and I'm going to you know, make this my domain. And, you know, when I looked at, you know, the servant's staircase and the servant's bell in the dining room and so on, and remember the grandeur of those days, it was all that much more impressive. And it just melded right in with my personality and my interest in history.
Once you were there going through the house and showing it to your family, you know, your wife had some reservations there. Was there any reservations with you? Was there any feelings that had come about of the home other than, this is the perfect home for us?
There were no reservations. I, you know, as far as being the perfect home, I kind of knew it wasn't.
Okay.
You know, that it was, you know, it was going to be a lot of money. It needed, you know, it had 46 windows in it, all needing replaced, if not more, because we didn't replace them all. And, you know, the furnace and all of these things needed to be updated. But that really didn't make any difference to me. I was just convinced that fate had determined that this was to be my house, and that's why the owners decided to sell it. At the same time, I was moving back to Pittsburgh with a new job and a promotion and a bunch of money in my pocket from selling a house that we had just built when I worked in New Jersey. So I felt everything came together at the same time. I had always wanted this house. I had always wanted to go into it. And here you go. I'm coming back, and my house is waiting for me. And I just thought that was all some type of predetermined plan. And in the end, I believe it was. Now, for much different reason. And I had no idea what I was getting into. Most likely would have done something else, but nonetheless, that's what happened.
So fate calls, the house of your dreams is there, practical or not practical as it may be. You get to the house, you buy the house, and you start moving in. How does that go? Is there anything, like, what is your first sign that maybe there's more that's coming with this house other than, you know, the feeling of history being there?
Well, the first thing that happened, and certainly my wife added to this, and she was more practical at the time when we were, one of the times we were, I think we had already agreed to buy it, and they were giving us more of a tour of the house, and we were in the basement looking at this giant old gas furnace that dated back to the late, I would suppose, 1940s, and my wife noticed that our three-year-old son was no longer with us, and she was concerned, where'd he disappear to? So she and the woman of the house, the wife of the owners, headed up the steps to find our little boy, and they came across Tim on the landing halfway up the steps to the second floor, breathing hard and shaking, and initially just thinking he was scared because he had gotten lost, but he had apparently started venturing up to the second floor and something stopped him. And my wife found it interesting that the woman reached out to him and said, "Oh, honey, did you see something? Did you see something?" And my wife thought, "That's interesting. What would he have seen?" And later, that prompted her to tell me, "This house gives me the creeps. There's something not right about this house. I don't like it. And I think rather than us buying it, it's kind of swallowing us up. And I don't feel comfortable with the house."
Were you writing it off as, kids get into things, they just kind of, they feel this or that? Did you personally at that moment put any legitimacy behind it, thinking, well, maybe he did see something?
I didn't, but I did ask the homeowner. I said to him, and I detail this in the book, I said, "Is there anything wrong with this house?" Mm-hmm. And you would think that he would take that question as being something wrong structurally or mechanically with the house and ask me to define it. But he knew right away what I meant. His reaction was quick and direct, and he said, "There's nothing wrong with the house. In fact, we've had a priest say Mass in the living room twice." Which, in a way, was some reassurance, but then I even questioned, having been raised Catholic, I was not Catholic at the time, but I said, "Who has Mass said in their house? Mass isn't something that's like taken on the road, it's said in a church." So it was an interesting response, which in later years I would come to understand more and more, because we had Mass not only in the living room but in the bedrooms, in the third floor, in the basement, more times than I could count. Saying Mass in the house became one of our weapons.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.